I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit our show archives at tvtimemachine.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Harry Safety Award Dickens. See that table? I made it with my own two hands. Couldn't find any wood. How's that?
That's not funny. You know, there are going to be a lot of dignitaries there. The mayor and the chief of police.
The mayor and the chief of police. The mayor said to the chief of police, "Hey, chief, we left the safe open at City Hall." The chief says, "What are you worried about? We're both here."
If I told that joke, they'd hand me my head.
Good, then you can put it in your pocket where no one have to look at it.
Come on, Arch, that's sick.
Sick, sick, sick. Of course, the whole world is sick. That's why we have so many doctors on television. You know we have so many doctors on television, I've watched so many medical shows. The only channel I watch now is 98.6. Ha-ha, 98.6.
Hey,
that's the bathroom
Arch,
one right
on,
there. The other day my set was broken. You know who fixed it? A nurse. Came over and fixed the television. The other day, during Ben Casey, I sat too close to my television set. You know what happened? I caught the measles. I can only watch my television every 4 hours, you know that? Oh, I needed that, thanks. Did you get anything you could use?
We're back again with actor, comedian, and businessman extraordinaire Marty Ingalls.
I don't remember doing that. That was funny.
Right here on the TV Time Machine. Marty, that was a clip from the classic Dickens and Fenster episode entitled The Joke.
Yes.
The Joke is probably the edgiest of all the Dickens and Fenster episodes, and it definitely...
I don't remember it. What was it about?
It was about a seemingly innocent joke that escalates into an all-out war. Where you've got one group who thinks it's funny and then the other group who doesn't think it's funny and then they war with each other.
That's a great concept. You know, that's the kind of thing that made the Dick Van Dyke Show timeless. There are some people who write comedy. You know, some comedy is, you know, it's dated. You watch some of the Gunsmoke things, this, that. You watch the Dick Van Dyke Show. It's about human foibles, things that people do, husband and wife, that they still do, because Carl Reiner thought that way. He has, anyway, that was great. That little clip was great. What else?
The supporting players on Dickens and Fenster, how important were they to the show, and who were some of the people who supported you and John Astin?
Well, you know, Henry Beckman was always a road company. Spencer Tracy looked like him. He was a sensational act, and he was a tough guy on the show. And then there was, can't think of the other guys. Who's the other guy?
Well, there was Dave Ketchum.
Dave Ketchum was like the secondary guy there. Very good, a terrific actor. There was another guy with a funny name.
Noam Pitlick.
Noam Pitlick went on to do a lot of things. They were the, You'll Never Get Rich. What's his name?
Phil Silvers.
The Phil Silvers group. What were those guys for Phil Silvers? Without those guys, there'd be no Phil Silvers. But in fact, John was really the pivot. John could have done it. Nice to have the set and have the other guy, not to put him down any, but John and I, there was so much of an Abbott and Costello here that was basically John and I, even when we were in a living room together, you know, there was a one particular segment where John becomes the foreman. They move him up, and his first order of the day is to fire Fenster. Well, he goes back and forth with his wife. I can't fire my best friend. You know? I can't fire him. You have to fire him or your job is going to be gone, she says. And then I come walking in the door, and it's so sweet. You know what I mean? Those two guys, it's like Dean and Jerry. They loved each other, and you saw it there, you know?
I think what made Dickens and Fenster unique in terms of the relationships of the characters and the way that the characters were formed was the fact that you kind of went against type in that John Astin was a straight man and yet he did pratfalls, and you were the funny guy and yet you were also the handsome, debonair, sexy guy.
Well, for a comic, I guess I was okay. John always bemoaned the fact that he took all the hits.
Right.
Boy, he was black and blue all the time, and I never realized what he was going through because I never did that. I was not the guy that fell. I was the, you know, the funny, you know, boisterous boob who got the girls, and there was one whole segment about whether or not I was going to make it with Sally Kellerman or not, you know? And it was funny because we did double talk. You know, once I was at a party and I was just doing some double talk, and they said, let's put it in. They built a whole show around the fact. So when I went with Sally, the one thing I forgot to tell the guys is when I talk to a girl and I get nervous, I sometimes go into a blah, 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 hey, the ball was long, blah, 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 tell me stop it, totally, you know. So they, what are you talking Martian about? We got a bet going. Can't you talk to a girl? Yeah, I do, but when I get very, very nervous, I go, blah, 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 Michelle. So, you know, they were looking into our lives to see what we wore. So the guys were great, but it was John. He better send me a note now that I've done this, this son of a gun. I said God before.
Well, you did, though. You did do your share of physical comedy, particularly one of my favorite episodes where you impersonate a world-famous flamenco dancer.
Oh, that was the best. That was review. Yeah, I got on the table and did my thing.
Well, you were impersonating him, but you didn't know what he really did as an occupation, which we'll hear in the following clip.
Yes, sir. Do you have a reservation? Balenciaga. Are you Carlos Balenciaga?
Do you know Carlos Balenciaga?
No,
I'm Carlos Balenciaga.
I've always been a great admirer of your work.
Yes, well, thank you.
To me, there is only one Carlos Balenciaga.
I don't know.
I know this isn't the place to say this, but I wonder if you would show me one.
I'm sorry, I didn't bring one with me.
What amazes me is you do what you do as well as you do.
Well, you know, well, when you do it, you have to do it to the best you can do it.
Now, Marty, in that episode, you did things ranging from impersonating a mannequin to impersonating the great Balenciaga. Do you think that Dickens and Fenster was the perfect vehicle for your brand of comedy?
Perfect. And actually, a tour de force to any comic, any funny man. Now, to me, that's much more of an accomplishment than stand-up. I mean, as far as being able to do it, not every stand-up guy can be a, you know, can be a Red Skelton, you know. Red Skelton was, you know, a clown type. And I think that's a great thing, even to this day. You know, I can go, you know, again, there are people who say funny things and people who, you know, George Carlin was a brilliant guy, but he was the guy that said funny things. He was not funny himself. He did 400 pilots and it couldn't work. America didn't buy him as an actor. He was much more of a writer. I'm not a writer and, you know, life is funny to me. And that, I don't want to say it again, should have carried me further, but, I mean, look at how it makes my life joyful. The other day, a man, probably a very funny story, but Shirley is the most proud of me for something I did once in a store with a man that threatened to kill me right in the store. It's a long story, but I was kind of, you know, joking with everybody online, trying to get in line quicker. There were three different cash registers and I'm trying to get online. And I was talking to everybody. There was a guy standing behind me. I had kind of a motorcycle type, you know, with the tattoos, and he was holding a bunch of groceries in his hand. And I was trying to walk in front of him and I said, you know, when I was in eBay, and then, you know, and when I got to him, I said, hey, you know what I could? And he looked at me and he said, one more word, and you'll never speak again.
Wow.
And he looked at me. I never quite, you know, I like to be Humphrey Bogart, and I don't like to get pushed around. What? And then it was my turn. I was at the cash register. He was behind me, and he was standing there. And I knew I would have to do something. Something. I don't know whether I wanted to be Charlie Bronson and turn around and do that great karate thing where you get him in the neck and he falls down. Because I was trained to do that. Nobody says, if you speak again, I'm going to end your life. And then I was not about to walk away, but I didn't know what to do. So while the lady was adding my stuff up and putting it in the bag, he was standing there. I don't know where I got this from, but I turned to her and I turned to him and I said, does that mean the dinner is off? Well, for some reason, I found, usually violent kind of guys don't laugh. He crumbled. He almost dropped his stuff, which led me to believe that maybe he wasn't all that tough. He was playing a role, too. But he certainly enjoyed that line. Does that mean the dinner is off? And I beat him. And Shirley said, boy, if you could do that with everybody. That is the thing.
Well, comedy is disarming. I'm sure that wasn't the only time that you were able to use comedy to your advantage and get you out of a tricky situation.
Oh,
when you were a kid, did you use comedy to get out of tricky situations, dangerous situations?
Again, not divisively as a strategy, because it was a natural thing. I gave up practical jokes. Because once I was injured, because I bought a practical joke. You may remember, they don't do it anymore. It was a little square, a rectangle pad, like a little portable radio, picture out about 2 inches thick and square, and it was made out of thick wood or something. And on the top it had like a speaker, and the bottom it had a button. And it said, press button to hear funny sound. And the button had a little hole in it, and there was a pin in there. So when you pressed the button, a pin went into your finger.
Oof.
And you said, oh, and that's the funny sound.
Right.
It was a joke.
Right.
So I said, boy, you know, anything to get like this, great. I paid my 7 cents or something, and I got it. I said, boy, I'll get laughs from people. And schmuck that I was, a 9-foot gorilla was walking down the street. I was sitting in front of my house. It was a hot day in the summer. I said, hey, you want to see something funny? Yeah, look at this. And he pressed the button down. And he took his fist, and as hard as he could do, he came down. I was a short little kid on the top of my head. Banged my head, and I was out on the floor. He stepped over me and walked away.
Wow.
I looked at that little thing, and I said, you know, I wonder if I can get my money back. It doesn't seem to be working. If it is working, I don't know. Should I be in the fucking hospital?
Apart from that situation, you know, there are different forms of comedy. Like, I do a lot of puns. A lot of people say that doing puns is the lowest form of humor that exists.
That's not my kind of thing, because puns are just, you know, word jokes.
Right. Practical jokes.
I don't go for them for some reason.
What do you think of practical jokes? Is that real humor, or is that just cruelty?
Well, wait a minute. That's why we have why is humor the test word? Are practical jokes a legitimate, genuine? Do they have a purpose? Is it really okay? Not for me, because there's a period at the beginning of every practical joke that's not funny. You got to go on the, you know, oh my God, come in, nobody's here, and you got to play it serious, serious, serious. The funny part only comes when they all jump out and go, ha! Huh? Now you got to hope that the victim is happy about everything.
Right.
You know. I want to get morbid again. I was once at a party where they said, surprise, and the guest dropped in. Right there. They said, well, it's not working out, this party.
Right.
Okay? So I'm not a practical joke boy because there's no, it's not, you know, I pride myself in the fact that my voice, my face, my body language, my mannerism, my thoughts are humor about the world. And that's very different from saying, hey, let's press a button and see if you bleed. You know, it's right. Not an idea. So I'm not all that. I don't think practical jokes are humor. But Jesus, if you read all about the, you know, the Rat Pack and some of the things that they did with each other, my God, they had people who died, and they asked the coroner if they couldn't hold the body for a while. They made, gave a party, and people came, and they went in, and there he was, laying. They had liquor and pretzels around. He was laying in the... So, you know, that's... because more times than not... I always say that, you know, you do a practical joke, you know, and you say, guess what? No, it's not really a thing. It's not. And in the moment where you disappoint the guy and he pulls a $20 bill and it's attached to something that spills on him, or there's the thing I got even where you have a ketchup bottle. When you turn it over, they have a lot of red ropes in there. And when it turns over, looks just like it's the red is falling on your dress or your suit, you know?
Right.
Well, during that moment, that one moment, when you're laughing and the person is saying, you son of a bitch, I never liked you, I'm sleeping with your wife, I'm just going to steal your money, you son of a bitch, and I'm going to have you killed. Oh, it's only ropes. Oh. Well, forget the part about your wife and the killing
right.
And the money. You know.
Right.
Excuse me. Well, wait a second. Let's back up a little bit. So the things you say, you know, I always advise young girls who say, oh, how do I look for a husband? When you're going with a guy, have an argument with him. See how he is when he's angry.
Right.
That's the manner of a person. Then you know. Get him and hit him in his lowest point. Mm-hmm. See what happens when he gets angry. If he's compassionate and loving and forgiving still and gets over it, that's your man, you know?
Right.
If he threatens your dog, don't marry the guy.
Right.
Listen, this is like a long thing. I've grown two beards.
Exactly. Well, Marty, we're going to have to take a little break, but we'll be back in a moment with the marvelous Marty Ingles, who is traveling with us on the TV Time Machine.